Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. On March 3rd, 175 nations endorsed a resolution at the UN Environment Assembly in Nairobi, and this to end plastic pollution and to develop a legally binding agreement by 2024. The resolution addresses the full life cycle of plastic. This includes its production, design, and disposal. Now, how comprehensive does the treaty need to be when dealing with something as central to modern life as plastic? Let's ask Kamala Ernest, Program Management Officer at the United Nations Environment Programme's Regional Office for Asia and the Pacific Region. She's also the coordinator of the Southeast Asia Circular Project, which is an initiative to reduce marine plastic pollution by addressing the management of the plastic value chain in the region. Kamala, world leaders have until 2024 to develop this plastic pollution treaty. This timeline, it's wonderful. It expresses a certain sense of urgency. But I'm just wondering how complex the issues are going to be that need to be worked out to be included in this treaty. And how realistic is that two-year timeline to achieve, to work out all the kinks of this treaty?
Yeah. Thank you, Melissa, and I'm glad to be here. So, yes, this treaty governments agreed upon yesterday. It's a major milestone agreement for the environment community. So the and governments, member states, they themselves have decided set the timelines to have this agreement ready for endorsement by the end of 2024. So within this time frame, countries will have to set up the intergovernmental committee, come to agree on the overarching context, the text that would then encompass this agreement. Of course, we are looking at an agreement which looks at the full life cycle of plastics, looking at the circular economy approaches, and also looking at the linkages between public and private sector coordination to move towards a circular plastic economy. So having said that, I think governments would need to come up with the text that they are comfortable and happy with and will be willing to implement at a national level. So this is a very ambitious and challenging task, and it will involve a lot of hard work. But then the biggest milestone or the major achievement from the meeting yesterday is that there is a high level of political commitment to come up with this collective action to address plastic pollution. So,
Kamala. I just want to quote here the director of the UN Environment Programme, Inga Anderson, says that the agreement at the UN Environment Assembly has been touted to be possibly the most important multilateral pact since the Paris Climate Accords in 2015. Now, with the Paris Accords, we have a time frame. There's 2050 is always often seen as the year that we are going to achieve these very important targets. We're now just talking about the treaty. The treaty is going to be ready in 2 years. But what is the target beyond that? Is there a sense of the time frame to significantly reduce plastic pollution production, and also to deal with already existing plastic waste?
Okay. So in terms of targets, these are some of the details that will be set by the negotiating committee, which should be realistic and should be applicable and taking into consideration of the different situation and conditions of member states. So that we would allow the negotiation to go on, which will start, I believe, in the very soon, within the next 6 months. And there was high level of commitment and pledges in terms of fundings to mobilize this. In terms of the magnitude and the seriousness of this issue, well, plastic is like a byproduct of, it's an innovative byproduct, which is versatile and durable. And but then the plastic pollution crisis is our own doing, and it will stay for a very long time. So to put things in perspective, yes?
Sorry, if I may just ask you to elaborate, because one of the things that was kind of highlighted at the Nairobi summit was the fact that, you know, this treaty, putting together this treaty is really to address plastic pollution through the life cycle of plastic. And I just was wondering whether you can help us understand what that meant. For me, I'm thinking about, you know, everything from the production of plastic all the way till how plastic is disposed. But maybe you can tell us what that strategy would entail. What kind of methods, what kind of things would you be looking at in terms of kind of reducing plastic pollution?
Okay, so there are a number of things that can come out, but then there is also, the resolution has clear guidelines. First is to define the objective of the agreement, and then to look at different elements, as you mentioned, the life cycle analysis, so how plastic is produced, used, collected, sorted, recycled, and also the management of its end of life. So that's the whole circular economy approach. There will be also a financial instrument to support countries to implement the legally binding agreement, elements of the legally binding agreement. The resolution was also looking at improving the data and the science and policy interface. So there will be a panel on sound management of waste and chemicals that would have also a link to plastic pollution. So there is an element of financing, there is an element on improving data and science. There's an element also on, data collection methods, methodologies, and so on. It is a typical element of any legally binding agreement that we have seen in the past. So all the lessons learned and also all the elements from other multilateral environment agreements will be factored in.
I want to ask you about that, because in the climate discussion or the climate crisis discussion, you know, this expression common but differentiated responsibilities often used to distinguish, you know, the burden on this project, you know, on a global scale will fall, right? And so I wonder if it applies here as well, the US being, for instance, one of the largest polluters, at least in terms of plastics. And so how does it operate? Does this principle operate in the discussion about plastic pollution as well?
Yes, it was one of those. A number of member states did highlight that as part of the discussion in the negotiation. I personally believe it is a common and collective action that is needed for plastics. So a differentiated approach would be part of it, but then this is not a blame game. So I think a more comprehensive and holistic and collective actions would be what member states and other parties would like to see.
Okay, can I ask you which countries are kind of leading the way in terms of plastic reform?
A lot of countries are doing good stuff in terms of planning, having a strategy, policy, mobilizing market instruments to to have to reduce plastic pollution. I can take an example in the Southeast Asia region. There is already a regional framework to guide in addressing the marine debris. Of course, Southeast Asia is also known as a hotspot for plastic pollution. So there is this ASEAN Marine Debris Framework of Action that is sort of guiding the ASEAN member states. And Malaysia is also in the forefront. They have recently also launched the National Marine Litter Action Plan. And there's also a plastic sustainability roadmap that was also recently launched. So while countries are looking at this global agreement and trying to set what that would be by the end of 2024, there are a lot of good practices and initiatives that are already taken by many countries. Malaysia is one of those that are in the forefront.
Kamala, why is it necessary then? You say some countries are doing well. Why can't this problem be resolved at a national level? Why does it need a global agreement?
Okay, that's a very good question. So it is the problem is a global problem. See, if I give some statistics, so there are about 400 million tons of plastic produced annually. And of this, 300 million tons goes to the waste dump. And 11 million tons of this goes into the ocean. So 85% of all marine debris are plastic waste. So this is a huge problem, and due to the transboundary nature of plastic and plastic pollution. So we need a global solution that is collective and actionable by all parties.
Okay, Kamala, we're going to take a quick break. Let's come back and continue this conversation. Still a lot of areas to cover. We're going to be back after these messages, but stay tuned to consider this. Thanks for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Let's continue our conversation with Kamala Ernest from the United Nations Environment Programme. Kamala, you mentioned a little bit earlier in the conversation that Southeast Asia is a hotspot for marine plastic pollution. I'm quite curious about that. How do we know, do we understand where the plastic debris, the plastic waste comes from, and exactly what is the ecological impact of all this marine waste that's ended up in our waterways?
Right. So, as I mentioned earlier, most of the plastic waste that goes into the marine environment are from land-based sources. And these are mainly from human activities. And one of the key things that cause this is unsustainable consumption and production. So just to give you a perspective, like if we do a takeaway today, it's highly likely that the food takeaway is wrapped in plastic bags, right? Mm. So we are not blaming the consumer or the operator, but the problem is there. And it is the mindset and the attitude of this linear economic lifestyle, which is to make, use, and dispose, which is really unnecessary, avoidable, because single-use plastics are discarded within minutes after usage. So this is where the problem is. Then we have the issue of poor waste management. When we do a material flow analysis of a waste dump or a landfill, there's a lot of plastics that can be found. And these are leakages that can lead, that can go into the marine environment. So these are a big issue, especially in Southeast Asia. The management of waste is quite poor.
If I can just jump in, it's quite interesting because I think a lot of us who are, you know, conscientious and want to, you know, separate our trash and want to see our plastics recycled, also are faced, with headlines that suggest that what we thought was going to be recycled wasn't in fact recycled, or, you know, recycled stuff was exported to, you know, third world countries to pollute their environments rather than the home environments, as it were, where those plastics originated. How do you get public buy-in when there's been such depressing news about the reality of, say, recycling?
There should be a lot of education and awareness raising on this issue and strong legal and regulatory enforcement tied to the management of waste. So a lot of advocacy by civil society has been very helpful. What I'm thinking is also incentives for household and community to encourage recycling, for example. There are very good case studies in Petaling Jaya that we had implemented, where households are encouraged to do recycling and a range of other eco-friendly actions, and in return they would get a reduction in the tax assessment as a rebate. So these are some of those incentives for the public to encourage them and bring them on board. The other thing is public participation, to include them in the policy making process, which I think Malaysia has done quite well.
Okay. I'm sure there are areas, room for improvement, particularly in this area. And I think, you know, coming back to Sharad's question about recycling, I think about my own kind of personal plastic waste, the amount of plastic waste my household generates. And I'm thinking about whether the recycling element of this pushes the onus onto the consumer, for the consumer, shifting blame to the consumer from perhaps the source of the plastic production, the corporations that produce and use plastic packaging. How do we get the buy-in of businesses, of the corporate world? Is it down to just legislation and regulation, Kamala? Is it down to kind of governments saying that, you know, they're committing to reducing plastic production and therefore corporations and businesses must also comply?
Not necessarily. It varies by country, but I think businesses play a key role because they are the producer of plastics, and also there's a whole plastic value chain of different stakeholders involved in the recycling. So it's what would be good is to have an integrated approach that all the stakeholders along the plastic value chain are involved in the recycling, to increase the recycling, because some of the problem is the lack of integration between the formal and informal sector waste collection and management system, which is now breaking the whole recycling approach.
Okay. Kamala, I have to ask you, do you see a future, at least in our lifetimes, where single-use plastic is no longer in production, no longer used, not ubiquitous, not part of everyday life?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that resolution is what that was agreed, is to end plastic pollution. And single-use plastic is one of the main area for consideration. As I mentioned, it's unnecessary and avoidable. And also, it is the largest contributor to plastic waste. So I feel like if single-use plastic is tackled, then almost half the battle is already accomplished.
That's wonderful. I want to ask you, though, if you can point to some of the best practices, especially if they exist in the region, that Malaysia could look to in order to, you know, jumpstart the process even before the treaty is, you know, signed and delivered in 2024?
Yes, I think, as I mentioned, Malaysia has this plastic sustainability roadmap that aims to, promote a circular plastic economy by bringing in a range of stakeholders to work together on it. So in terms of best practices, there are a number of best practices already available in the country by recyclers. There's also the enablement of extended producer responsibility as a market instrument that Malaysia has prioritized. And there are also a number of, these are at initial stages, but then extend producer responsibility organizations. And they hold a key role in the world of recycling by linking brands, retailers, with the informal sector. So this is a model that's new, emerging, and being explored. And so this is one way to look at mobilizing the big industries towards more recycling. There are also, a promotion for plastic footprint disclosure. And these are some of the very first steps to set baselines and also to set targets to improve. And a lot of companies are already doing this and in terms of plastic footprint disclosure and so on. So these are some of the good uptakes from the industry. In other countries that we could that could inspire is the complete ban of single-use plastic, like in a number of African countries who are leading on that front. So these are on the regulatory side. I think the list can go on.
All right. Well, Kamala, thank you so much for speaking with us tonight. Thank you for taking time. That was our conversation with Kamala Ernest from the United Nations Environment Programme. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.